This episode is sponsored by Verizon. Are you ready for your next assignment? As a leading communications technology company, Verizon is always looking for experienced leaders to step forward and help us stay competitive in the global marketplace. More than 10,000 veterans contribute their skills across our entire business. We're proud to work alongside them each day and fortunate to benefit from their outstanding skills, discipline, and experience. To learn more about joining our team, check out verizon.com/military. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military and their families thrive in their civilian career. Today's episode number 321 about emotional intelligence with Carrie Meyer.
One of the things that I want folks to know is this is worth the investment. It's worth the investment in you because there's not, I don't believe, an area of your life that won't be positively impacted by learning about emotional intelligence and how you can incorporate it into every aspect of your life. I have seen relationships, marriages, relationships between children and parents made better by it. I've seen work relationships made better by it. I've seen dysfunctional teams become functional as a result of doing this type of work. And some of it can be challenging, but at the end of the day, it's worth it.
Today is a skills episode where I meet with an expert to learn a skill that will help any military veteran in their civilian career. Today, I talk with Carrie Meyer about emotional intelligence, and Carrie makes some incredible statements about how if you are going to pick just one skill to learn, emotional intelligence is hands down the one to pick, with a clear and direct impact on your earning potential and very clear ways to start to improve your EQ or emotional intelligence no matter where it is today. Often on Beyond the Uniform, my guests talk about how military veterans are perceived in interviews and in the workplace as being harsh, abrasive, and unempathetic. We talk about how to avoid these stereotypes and, just in case they're true for you, improve in each one of these areas. If you like this episode, be sure to check out episode 118, Empathy and Nonviolent Communication, with me. It was actually our very first skills episode. You'll find links to that episode as well as references to everything we discuss and a text transcript for today's interview at beyondtheuniform.org, where you'll also find over 300 episodes that are completely free and a whole host of online events, webinars, and more. So with that, let's dive into my conversation with Carrie. Joining me today in Reno, Nevada, my guest is Carrie Meyer. Carrie, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Special thanks to Mike Figliolo for making the introduction. I want to give listeners a little bit of context for your background. Carrie is the CEO of Sync Learning. She has spent over 22 years in corporate America in operations, support, and learning and development roles, including leading teams at Intuit, Symantec, and Veritas Technologies, where she was most recently Director of Learning and Performance. So Carrie, maybe to set a little bit of stage, if you bumped into someone on the street and they said, hey, Carrie, what is it that you do for a living? How do you explain that these days?
What I normally say is I consult with companies to drive impact. And I do that through things like leadership development, coaching, facilitation, training, process improvement, that type of thing. And generally speaking, what people recognize is that we're able to reduce employee turnover, reduce costs, improve productivity and processes, and ultimately happier employees. Mm.
As you've worked with different companies, like what are some of the things that often shift that make people happier or make people stay at a company longer? I'm sure it like varies very much by company, but are there any trends you've seen?
Most recently, what I've seen is just the ability to have freedom and flexibility with work. And that's different for everyone, right? So for me personally, that has shifted as my family has changed, as my socioeconomic status has changed, as my location has changed. And I think that's true of a lot of people. You know, you need different things at different stages of life. And companies that are doing it really well are able to recognize that that is different for every individual employee and be able to flex for them. And so that might look like, you know, working sometimes from home or being able to have an iPad in addition to a cell phone. It really does look different for everybody. But I've seen that be one of the biggest shifts in the last 5 years, I would say.
It's interesting because I imagine it's like I have this image that years and years ago it was more one size fits all for employees, but it seems like some companies are learning to adapt to realize people are very unique and have different desires and finding ways to meet each of those people in a way that makes them happy and fulfilled at work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, most people wake up in the morning and they want to do a great job. And our job as leaders is to create the conditions for them to be able to do that best work of their lives. And that environment is going to look different for everyone. I may not be able to any longer be in an office from 9 to 5, but there was a time in my life where I desired that structure. Mm-hmm. And so that's unique to everyone.
One question that came up, and I'm not sure if this relates to your work, but I'm aware as you're saying that, I think first of all, 100%, it's like interesting for me to think how my desires of work have shifted in different, I don't know, 3 to 5 year increments. Mm-hmm. And I'm also aware a lot of our audience is on active duty. All they know is active duty military. And whether or not they realize it, my guess is that at least some of them don't really know what they want. Like they don't know, would they rather have a remote working job or an in-person one and things like that. Have you come across any way for people to get more clarity around either values or things that are important to them to consider for a work environment?
You know, that's an interesting question. I'm not aware of any one particular tool other than there are a variety of personal assessments you can take regarding your own personal values and how that might translate to the type of career you choose. What comes to mind in that respect is things like strength finders or some value-based assessments. If you just even Google value-based assessments, you'll find quite a few. I think one of the things that I ask actually when I hire people is describe to me the conditions under which you do your best work. What does that look like? What does it feel like? And really get them to try to tap into almost the emotional state of where are they happiest and where are they most creative? Where are they most productive? If you think about all of those things that make you a great, whether it be soldier or parent or partner, there's generally some adjectives that you would use to be able to describe those. And then you're starting to go down the path of where you do your best work. And I think matching that up to the best work environment would be appropriate.
I love that question too, describe the conditions under which you do your best work and just thinking through, because I would even think through on when I was on submarines, like the projects that I really enjoyed and looking back, I can see how that influences the work I do now. And so I think that's a nice shortcut in there. Part of the work that you do is, I'm guessing, is supported by this thought of emotional intelligence. It and is. I'm wondering, first, just for listeners, like what role does that play in the work that you do? And then also, what is your sense of what emotional intelligence is?
Yeah, so let me start with just kind of a brief definition. The way I think about emotional intelligence is it's our ability to recognize and understand our own emotions, but then also the emotions of others. So you may be really good at understanding your own, but not others, or vice versa. And then you have to be able to use that information to manage your behavior and the relationships between you and others. And so it's that overall, all-encompassing area in which emotional intelligence is defined. I think a lot of times people get IQ and EQ a little bit confused. So EQ is another way of describing, it's just a shortened version for emotional intelligence. And the thing is, it doesn't matter how smart you are, your IQ, you can be really, really smart and have low EQ. low emotional intelligence. And whereas IQ is a little bit fixed, you know, there's been lots of studies to say that you don't really increase your IQ by too many points over time. EQ is really flexible. Anybody can increase their emotional intelligence. And it really is something that is worth investing in. And there's a lot of data and studies to show why that's important.
And when you meet with people, or if you were meeting with a group and someone was like, well, why should I even care about that? I care about my IQ. I'm going to drink my MCT oil and do whatever I can to support that. But why do I care about emotional intelligence? Why should listeners care about this?
Yeah. So there is a study that shows that only 36% of people that are tested are able to accurately identify their emotions as they happen. So if I'm feeling anger or I'm feeling suspicion or anxiety, only one third of the population is able to correctly identify that in the moment. That means two thirds of us are walking around being controlled by our emotions. And so being able to spot what those emotions are in the moment and be able to use them to our benefit and to help build relationships is critically important. But even if that was just the, you know, let's just say that was enough, there's actually other evidence to suggest that 58% of performance in all types of jobs is completely tied to emotional intelligence. So emotional intelligence is predictive of success on the job and is the single most biggest predictor of performance. The other thing that they found is that 90% of people who are high performers across evaluations have high emotional intelligence. But only 20% of low performers have high emotional intelligence. So you start to see that disparity. And then finally, the biggest thing for, I think, me at some point in my career was to make more money. I was a single mom for a while, and I tell you, that's what was motivating to me. And what I found in studies is that people with high emotional intelligence actually make more money. On average, $29,000 more per year. And so it starts to, you know, ring true that, gosh, this might be a good investment to figure out how I can raise those EQ points. They found that every time you raise one EQ point, it equates to $1,300 in annual salary. That's a lot. So it holds true across all industries, levels, and regions of the world. So I think it's worth considering.
Wow, that's fantastic. You know, one thing that came up for me that I'm embarrassed to admit, I think when we were talking about emotional intelligence, I was assuming, let me learn how to understand someone else in the workplace, because then I can motivate them or lead them or navigate conflict. And the thing that stood out that was kind of a blind spot for me is how this is equally, if not more so, about understanding my own emotions and understanding, I'm guessing, you know, some of it is, I'm triggered, I'm angry right now. Maybe I shouldn't be having this conversation, or I'm feeling lonely. Maybe I can work with someone right now, or I'm feeling like really understanding my emotions, because that's going to affect how I show up in my work and how I show up in my interactions in the workplace. And it's, I loved your definition because it's about, seems like both aspects of that.
It is. So commonly you'll see emotional intelligence split into four different areas of focus. One is that self-awareness that I was speaking of earlier. And that's, you know, our ability to accurately perceive our own emotions in the moment and our tendency of how we show up in those situations, whether we get triggered, whether we are delighted, you know, those types of things. The second part is self-management, and that's our ability to use our awareness of those emotions to stay flexible and be able to pivot so that we can direct our own behavior accordingly. And that's where I think a lot of people get tripped up, is that self-management, right? We may be aware that we're angry or that we're triggered, but then what to do about it? And so when you study emotional intelligence and you just learn some simple skills, you can learn in the moment to not only identify that emotion or that trigger or whatever it is, but you also have some new tools in your tool belt, so to speak, to be able to apply to regulate and self-manage. The third area is social awareness. And what that is our ability to accurately intuit or pick up emotions in others and understand really what's going on with them. You know, you'll see parents, for example, learn how to do that with their own children. But extrapolating that further, it becomes a little more challenging in the workplace or when you're transitioning from the military into the workplace. And so listening and observing are the most critical elements of that social awareness piece of the emotional intelligence skill. And then that last, the fourth one, is relationship management. And that's where everything kind of comes together. It's using your awareness of yourself and your social awareness. So putting all of that together so that you can successfully navigate all of your interactions.
I love those distinctions. I think that's really helful. On that first piece, what I heard with self-awareness is kind of, I like the way you said it. What I remember you saying was kind of like noticing what I'm feeling and then noticing how that's showing up. And for people who listen to the Saturday episodes, you've heard me talk about the men's group work that I do. I had this experience a couple weeks ago where with this group of men, I was talking about an experience with an interaction with my wife. And the way I was telling it was like, yeah, you know, she said this and I told her this. And like two of the guys were like, oh man, is that how you said it to her? Because that comes across as like really angry. And in my mind, I was cool as a cucumber. I was just delivering a fact. And with the feedback of these other guys around me, realized like, oh man, I had a lot of charge behind that. There was a lot of anger. She probably took that as an attack or as a criticism. And I had no idea on that. So I love that nuance on all of these of kind of, you know, with that one in particular, not only what's going on, but how am I communicating that to others?
Yeah. And you know, one of the simple tricks to kind of build that muscle over time is something called outside versus inside awareness. And what you do is, you know, when you have 30 seconds to a minute, just think about focusing your attention on the outside world by completing the sentence. I'm aware of, and it might be, I'm aware of the birds singing, or I'm aware of the hair touching my face, or whatever that may be for you. And then you shift your attention to what's happening in your body. I'm aware of my heart, you know, pounding, or I'm aware of feeling really excited with lots of energy. And you kind of go back and forth between those observations of the outside world and experiences in your body. And what it does is it starts to give you a new vocabulary and just that self-awareness. And so that's something you can practice. Nobody knows that you're doing it, right? And it can happen in just a few quick moments. But that's when we talk about just building some of that skill with emotional intelligence.
That's wonderful. And I would love to maybe deepen on that. And just the $1 million question for today is, how do people improve their emotional intelligence? And I love at the start, you made that distinction that with IQ, you're kind of stuck. With EQ, lots of room. It seems like there's some room to improve and a tangible benefit to improving it. So what other advice do you have for listeners about how they can strengthen this muscle or really cultivate, you had said earlier, kind of the toolkit, how they can start to cultivate a toolkit?
Sure. So the first step is just to learn more before you practice. And I'll give you three different ways you can do that. The first one's free. The second one's less than $15. And other ones are, you know, more than that. So freely available to anyone is to check out resources on the internet or the library. There are tons of books, you know, articles, short videos, YouTube videos, everything on this particular subject. My personal go-to free website is 6seconds.org. I think this company is awesome. Everything I've ever seen of theirs has been free. 6 Seconds is, their website basically says they're a community of change makers contributing to a world of insight, connection, and purpose. And what they do is they have this vision that they can get 1 billion people practicing the skills of emotional intelligence and literally change the world. And so they offer their research free. You have all sorts of tools that they make available. They'll even provide curriculum for schools. And so it's just a fabulous organization. So that's the free path. The second one is under $15. And I get I have no affiliation with this company whatsoever, but I have to tell you, this is like the most fantastic book ever. It's called Emotional Intelligence 2.0 by Travis Bradbury and Gene Greaves. And Drs. Bradbury and Greaves, basically they boiled everything that you need to know about emotional intelligence down into a short book. And what I love about this book is that they give you a code to take an online self-assessment. And then you get back a detailed report that you print out right away on your level of emotional intelligence. And it goes across those four areas that I talked about earlier. So then the book walks you step by step how to increase your EQ scores in whatever your lowest categories are. And so, and they give all sorts of different practical tips to implement to practice in those areas. And then once you're finished, you just move on to your next lowest area. And so it's cheap. Right now on Amazon, I think it's like $14.80. So for less than a $15 investment, you could be looking at, you know, $29,000 in salary every year. So, you know, that's a pretty good return.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And there's a, I have thoughts, but I'm waiting for the third one before I chime in.
The third one. That's right. That's right. So the third one is, you know, more expensive ways would be to take a course. Most often you see people taking courses on EQ in intact teams or when they're looking to teach it to others, because there's so much available that's either free or really, really cheap. Now I'm not saying don't go to a course. I'm just saying that, there's a lot that's available that you don't have to necessarily make that big of a financial commitment. And then after you learn, you just need to practice it. So it's just like any sport, learning a new sport or a language or a musical instrument. You're going to get better and better with practice. So it's just building that muscle.
That's great. It is so funny that you mentioned Emotional Intelligence 2.0. I had a call with Steve Bain, who helps me out a lot with Beyond the Uniform and is on our team here. And we were literally looking at his book on Amazon and saying, like, how do we get that guy on the show too? So it's great to hear that endorsement from you.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, is there, you had mentioned earlier, I love that outside versus inside awareness. Have you found any good tools as well to kind of start to build that vocabulary of emotions or feelings or what's going on?
Yes. So two things I would suggest. One is for anybody anywhere to just Google emotion wheel. You're going to find different versions of it, but the gist is the same. And what that is you'll see things that we're used to using, like anger, happiness, sadness, frustration, right? Those are pretty generic terminology for emotions. But other things that are directly correlated might be angst or disgust or betrayal. We're not used to using that type of terminology. But getting really good at emotional intelligence helps to move you beyond that kind of superficial language to really getting to the heart of what's driving a particular emotion or response to that. The other thing that I would say is don't be afraid to be authentic and vulnerable. And I know that that can be kind of a tricky word, especially with our veteran population. But what I mean by that is this. If you have a couple of important people in your life that you can trust, or maybe you're trying to practice emotional intelligence at work, if you're going into a meeting or you're going to be giving a presentation, or maybe you're just going to have a conversation with your child or significant other, don't be afraid to say, hey, listen, you know, I'm working on my emotional intelligence right now and I'm finding some things really difficult. So I would appreciate it if I'm coming across whatever it is that you've been told in the past that you have or have not done, fill in the blank there. So for me, it might be, you know, I've received feedback in the past that I can be very direct and it comes across as abrasive. If that's the case, I might say, you know, please help me. If you see that I'm doing that in this meeting, would you just pause and say, hey, you know, I'm receiving this as this way. Is that what you meant? And I'll correct and say, no. I'm just trying to move through this presentation quickly. So that wasn't my intention. Let me help you understand where I'm coming from. So giving people permission to help you on that EQ journey is just as important as the work that you're doing.
That's wonderful. I love on that second piece. It's like a calibration. And I love the example you gave, because in some fraction of the 300 interviews I've done, it often comes up that in hiring situations and teamwork, military veterans often come across as very direct, very abrasive, oftentimes harsh, oftentimes intimidating. And my guess is, or at least what the guests on the show have shared, is they are very rarely conscious that that is their impact. And so I love that, like the way you said that, even giving people permission to help you recalibrate. Oh, okay, this is what it looks like when I'm being abrasive. Might not feel like that to you, might not, you know, it's kind of using others that you trust. And I like that you said that vulnerability piece, being vulnerable with them and helping them improve. And I think for listeners who have done any sort of physical exercise, it's like making sure your form is correct on squats. Like, yes, you can use a mirror, you can kind of videotape yourself, but how much more helpful is it if you have a coach or someone watching you to make sure you're doing things right? And you may feel like you're perfectly upright, you might be bent all over the place. So I think that's a great distinction that you gave there. And I also love your thought on the emotion wheel. I'll look that up and add it in the show notes for listeners at beyondtheuniform.org. I know years ago I did this training called nonviolent communication. And after that, I carried around my wallet for years, a little card that exactly had that. And it was like, it was deepening the palette of emotions. And it's like, you know, for me at least, it was like, okay, anger, maybe sadness and joy were the three. And like you said, you start to build up a distinction of like, oh, this maybe isn't actually sadness. This is loneliness. Okay, this is what loneliness feels like. And you can start to develop its, I heard someone say the other day, I loved it. It was like, what makes experts is their number of distinctions. Like an expert sommelier, like I know like red wine and white wine, right? An expert sommelier has these like incredible distinctions where they know the region and the year and all of these things, and that's what makes them an expert. And the thought of developing that expertise around emotion is having those distinctions. And I love the ones you gave, like disgust and betrayal. Like how many people could really pinpoint that and say like, this is what's going on? But if you have that precision, you could start to investigate it. Like, what am I disgusted about? Oh, I'm feeling betrayal. What's going on in this work environment that I feel betrayed, or in this relationship, so I can address that? And that precision can allow you to resolve the source of that a lot faster.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about, you know, one of the questions I had, I know we've kind of covered this a little bit, but it was that veterans are often stereotyped as being harsh or having a low EQ. And regardless of whether or not that's true, it seems like that's a perception a hiring manager is going to have. And I'm wondering, in addition to actually developing a higher EQ, is there any advice you'd give to listeners about how to maybe counterbalance that, or how to make sure they're addressing that so they're not perceived in that way?
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind for that. One is, you know, a lot of different populations have something that comes across that way, right? So I'll just use myself as an example. As a woman in business, I've gotten feedback in the past of, you know, you're coming across aggressive or too assertive. What does too assertive look like? You know? So I think one of the things that has served me well, and I've seen it used by all populations, veterans, folks of different ethnicities coming in into a mixed population, is really focusing on intent versus impact. And what happens is this: I may have an intention of showing up as being open to everyone's perspectives and sharing my own perspectives and creating an environment where all voices are heard. But the questions I may be asking or the comments I'm making are having an opposite impact. And so you've got intent and you've got impact, and that divide can be pretty wide for a while. The thing that closes those up and helps them to be like this is communication. So going back to that example of just saying, hey, my intention is to have this be an open communication, to have us both hear, you know, have our voices heard and understood. My intention is to move to this particular area in the process, whatever that intention is. By giving voice to that right away, it helps to kind of dissolve some of those initial perceptions. The second thing I would say is, going back to those four skills of EQ, the self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and relationship management, I think a great way to reverse that perception or misperception in a meeting or interview is to draw a correlation to their service, whatever branch of service that was. So for example, for self-awareness, it's that ability to accurately perceive our own emotions in the moment, right? And our tendencies in specific situations. Well, I've never met a veteran yet who didn't have to practice self-awareness daily, right? Whether that was on the battlefield or in the office or, you know, clerking, you know, whatever it is, fixing vehicles. So using an appropriate quick story in an interview to demonstrate how they practiced self-awareness without actually using the term self-awareness, because that might kind of come across a little odd, I think it would go a long way, because interviewers are, they're cueing in to stories that are demonstrating whatever that skill set is that they're looking for. So I would kind of tie those to specific appropriate stories.
That's wonderful. I love that first piece about the intent versus the impact, and how the communication is the bridge between those two. And I love for listeners to view this as kind of an iterative circle of putting out an intent, seeing the impact, learning. It's not I do this and it's perfect. It's learning and tweaking and iterating. And then I love your illustration of using the story to show how someone has emotional intelligence. Like, I can think of a time when I was on submarines and my watch team was, we had just failed an inspection and they were really down and distracted. And so I perceived that and I was able to kind of get them re-engaged and encourage them. And so using those stories to demonstrate, whether it's awareness of my own emotions or my team's, it's such a great way to get in front of that misperception. I think that's really a goldmine for listeners.
So I have a question for you. How did you perceive that their morale was down? What clues were you given that told you that?
It was, you know, the three people in particular, like they were hunched down. They were, you know, like their shoulders were dropped. They were their head was down. I would ask them a question and they weren't mentally with it. Normally they would be joking with each other and instead everyone was quiet. Those were the, and then there's the thing that I can't even put my finger on, of just the funk in the room.
The gut feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's interesting. UC Berkeley did a study and they found that we're able to recognize 24 emotions just by sound. So there are things like triumph, embarrassment, amusement, distress, pain, you know, and if you think about it, that's true. If you hear someone wailing, probably some sort of pain, right? Relief, like, oh. So just by sound, we can identify 24 emotions. So people think they're not good at this, but the truth is you are. You just have to give yourself time and space to really focus, like you did, in, hey, there's this little story I remember. What are all of the things that I recognized others feeling, myself feeling? And just taking time to write that down will prepare you well, whether it be for an interview or a meeting that you're using that story to illustrate a particular principle.
I love that. And when I was thinking about the intent versus impact, I love your language there of the communication. I had this experience recently with my wife. We've got this 8-month-old baby, life is crazy. And there was something where I forget, it was like she, you know, I said something, my story was I said something, she kind of threw down the laundry and was disgusted. And I checked in of like, hey, you know, my story is that you are pissed at me and you think I'm the world's worst dad. And she said, you know, she didn't even hear what I said. She was like, no, I am exhausted. And I just realized I have to write this email. And it's just like, it's funny because we'll come up with these stories that we think are true and using communication to figure out like, okay, was her intent to blow me off? Was her intent to push me away? That was maybe the impact, but her intent was to let off some steam because she was having her own thing going on. So yeah. I just love that thought of just practicing, checking in to see for ourselves and others, was that what they really intended? Was that, you know, what was the impact that it caused on you?
Yeah. And, you know, I think sometimes people get tripped up over language. It doesn't have to be, for me, intent and impact is a comfortable vernacular or language, but it could be something different for someone else. Whatever that means to you, use that. So practicing authenticity means using your own language to describe whatever it is you've just learned, right? Mm-hmm. So if that intention, I'm trying to think of a synonym for intention. Yeah. My idea was to do this, but I see that you felt this. You know, yeah. That's fine too. Mm-hmm. Just make it your own.
That's wonderful. Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and that you can take in two ways. Either, is there anything we didn't get to that you want to make sure listeners know, or is there just anything you'd like to reiterate before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I want folks to know is this is worth the investment. It's worth the investment in you because there's not, I don't believe, an area of your life that won't be positively impacted by learning about emotional intelligence and how you can incorporate it into every aspect of your life. I have seen relationships, marriages, relationships between children and parents made better by it. I've seen work relationships made better by it. I've seen dysfunctional teams become functional as a result of doing this type of work. And some of it can be challenging, but at the end of the day, it's worth it. Whatever that motivation is for you, whether it's to repair a broken relationship or to fix a challenged team or to earn more money, this really can make a huge difference.
That's great. And I think the numbers you gave at the start are so powerful for that. But it is compelling when you say that. It's like I'm hard pressed to think of one tangible skill that I could learn that could directly impact earning potential, quality of relationship with my family, quality of relationship with my friends, and even quality of relationship with myself and just self-compassion and understanding. Yeah. And when you look at bang for the buck, this is one skill set that really justifies a deeper dive. And so I appreciate your saying that because it, you know, for listeners, I know we always have show notes. We always have resources. Yeah. For $15, buying Emotional Intelligence 2.0 or get the audiobook for free on our site, like either one of those, $15 for $29,000 a year in revenue, it's a pretty good return on investment. And there's all these aspects of your life it could impact as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can't think of a single reason why someone wouldn't want to do it. And, you know, if $15 is too much for folks, there's free stuff everywhere.
Love it. Well, Carrie, thank you for your time today. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. And I appreciate your advice on all of this.
You bet. It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Surface. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points,
professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly, and the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.